This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
What does an 18-year veteran of the tech industry and a 20-year veteran of the military have in common? More than you might think. Welcome, everyone, to the Second Act podcast, leveling up your life's journey. You can't stop me. You don't got the power. Shut me down. That's not an option. I'm my biggest problem. You don't got the power. Shut me down. That's not an option. You can't stop me. Hey, Michael. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm super excited about yet another guest on our show today. Welcome everyone back to the Second Act podcast with Michael and John.
In this episode, we are excited to be joined by Ann Mole, a lifelong resident of Pennsylvania. Ann spent 34 years as an elementary and middle school music teacher who recently retired from her field of expertise, but keeps active as a choir singer in her local community and church. Post-retirement, Anne has also followed her passion for writing, where she's been leveraging all the modern-day learning tools available to improve her writing skills.
Yeah, and we don't give our teachers in this world enough recognition. I know, John, your wife is a teacher. My mom is a first grade teacher for 40 years. We sort of lose sight on how important a role teachers play in the development and success of those that go through their classes over the years. So first, a big thank you to all the teachers out there, and specifically, Anne,
thank you
for your contributions to the arts, music specifically. It's an important dimension to the creative side of people's brains and the way they think and plays both direct and indirect roles in the development of students. But what's kind of most interesting about this story today and our guest, Anne, is that as John and I were building out the second act, we were searching for URLs or the web addresses you use for business. And those are really hard to find nowadays because millions of people on any given day are buying up website names. So as we were doing that for the business, we came across Second Act Stories. We were like, hey, that might be a good fit for our business, but it was already taken. So this URL is owned, up and running. And I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And came across Anne and what she's about. And she's very much on her second act. And that's how our paths have crossed. So it's exciting to be talking with her, learning a little bit more about her second act in life. And as we get into that in a little bit, I just wanted to share a bit more about Anne. Outside of work, she spends time with her husband of 26 years. Congratulations. That is quite the stretch, and you have two fur awesome. Babies.
Yes,
West Highland White Terriers.
That's correct.
I'm sure they keep you busy. I have a Wheaton Terrier myself, so very familiar with the terrier breed. They can be stubborn. I don't know if you have that experience, Anne.
Oh yes, so we're hoping to keep them on mute for the duration of this.
Yeah. But we talk a lot about finding our purpose, following your passion, doing things to make yourself better every day, and your background embodies all of that. So all that said, John and I want to give you a big welcome to the show. Thanks for agreeing to come on and join us.
Thank you. I'm delighted for the opportunity.
So we want to jump into some Q&A. You guys, John, Anne, you ready to do it?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Let's go. Let's jump into it. So Anne, I understand you were born and raised in Pennsylvania. So tell us about growing up in a small town and some of the early childhood memories that helped shape who you are today.
I think I grew up in the quintessential mid-20th century American small town blue collar. I mean, it was a very much a front porch community. We all knew each other. It was supported at that time by factories and small independently owned businesses. And it was a very nurturing environment. I lived half a block away from my father's parents, who I spent a great deal of time with. My best friend that I grew up with across the street is still my best friend some 60 years later. So relationships run deep. I think the town was fiercely protective of its own and perhaps less open to newcomers and new ideas. But I'm also finding a great deal of story material from those years and from the kind of community that I was very fortunate to grow up in. You know, we kids ran the streets without fear and knew someone on every block. So we had parents and friends everywhere. And it was, again, it was close-knit, and the relationships formed there have lasted a long time.
That's awesome. How big a town are we talking about?
About 12,000.
Okay.
And obviously it has changed in those years. I mean, like so many communities, industries left. It is not the same place, sadly, that it was. There are efforts to rebuild, to reinvigorate. There is a great deal of history in the community, particularly Civil War history, but it is it's landlocked. The school district is limited as far as tax base, okay. And there have been some significant struggles in the years since I was there as a child. But it's a common. I mean, it's happening. It's happened everywhere across the country.
Yeah.
And what town is it in Pennsylvania?
Columbia, Pennsylvania. It's halfway between Lancaster, maybe about 60 miles west of Philadelphia, about an hour or so north of Baltimore, located in South Central.
So a little bedroom community out there that
more or less, yes,
back and forth to Philadelphia from, huh?
Not so much that, more so perhaps Lancaster, Hershey, as in Hershey chocolate.
Okay.
Is nearby. Gettysburg. It would be about 2 hours to Philadelphia.
I may have driven through Columbia, Pennsylvania at some point that I don't recall. But I do recall spending some time in Lancaster, and experiencing, the Amish history there, right. And some of the best family style food. I mean, farm to table right there. And
good place for carb loading.
Absolutely. And Hershey, Pennsylvania, I've been to as well. And there's the Hershey theme park and an abundance of chocolate there. So, that's a great part of the country.
Well, I'm going to give a shout out to my business partner on the commercial development side. Real estate commercial development. And he is from Lancaster and has done projects in there and in Columbia. So I know the area well. I've been out there a bunch, and it's a beautiful, beautiful area.
It is, yeah.
It's a river town. It's a lovely setting.
Yeah.
So 34 years committed to education in the field of music. That's dedication. Tell us more about your passion for music and some of your childhood memories that led you into this field, and specifically the field of music.
I think to some degree, my grandmother, again, was an influence. She was a product of the late Victorian era, and you know, she believed that all little girls should learn to play the piano. So it was kind of at her encouragement that I started piano lessons, and I did fairly well with it. And then I started playing flute in the school band and, achieved a reasonable amount of success. I enjoyed it a lot. It became like anything. It became sort of a lifestyle. There were private lessons and rehearsals and practicing, and it just became sort of my thing. And at that time, what do you do with that lifestyle? Well, you go into music education. As you know, go through these various honors bands and orchestras, I think, to be honest, I think at times it can give you a skewed perspective on how good you are, because it's a really big world out there like anything else. Mm-hmm. And I was by no means a performance-based music education major. I was interested in working with kids. My mother had been a teacher. There were other people in my family, aunts and uncles. And at that time, you know, high school guidance departments were somewhat limited. You know, you went to college or you went to trade school or you went into the military. It wasn't like you really had a lot of career counseling. And looking back, I mean, I was torn between English and journalism and music ed, but I think because I had been so immersed in the musical world, that just felt like that's where I should be headed. And it was, I was not a violin major. I was actually flute, piano, and voice, and ended up in a job teaching strings. And I still think that I was initially hired because they were trying to kill the program. And it ended up by hiring someone who really wasn't well-versed in that aspect of music education. And the first few years were, it was rough. I would not want to relive those again, because it was, you always learn on the job, but this was, But I persevered, and the school district persevered, and I had wonderful mentors, and the program grew. And they also eventually hired two other strings teachers, and we all brought different strengths to the job. We all had different things that collaboratively we had a really, really outstanding program. It took time, but the three of us worked together most of the time as a cohesive unit. And it was really a joy to be part of that program. And to this day, it is still thriving. That's another good thing. When you leave your job and other people come in and can do it as well, if not better, that's really rewarding.
Absolutely.
You know, Anne, you hit on a point that I wanted to stop and discuss for a second. You know, when building out teams, whether it's a team of teachers at a school, whether it's a team in sports or in business, you know, what we gravitate to is typically we gravitate to other people like us with the same strengths and weaknesses. But it's important, and you just alluded to that, to bring in people that have different strengths than yourself, because that's what's going to fill those gaps and fill those holes and make the team so much stronger.
Absolutely.
If everybody's got the same strengths, you're going to be weak somewhere else. But if you can find those people that have the strengths that you don't have, and you can recognize that both in introspectively to yourself and with the other individuals, man, how much stronger is that team? And you just said it yourself, the team is, you know, the program is still there and it's still thriving. So just wanted to elaborate on that.
Yeah, it worked. We had three different personalities, and it just different kids responded to different ones of us, but it worked. Sadly, one of those individuals who I always called the pain in the behind brother I never had has passed. We lost him to pancreatic cancer within a few months of his retirement. And it was heartbreaking for all of us. And we had an incredible celebration of life with like 200 of his former students coming back to play in the orchestra. And yeah, so it was a wonderful 34 years, despite some of the less pleasant aspects of public education. It was still, it was the right career choice. It was.
And Anne, when you started, it sounded like it was a bit of a mess. And you came in, but you weren't deterred by that in any way. You almost saw it as a challenge you wanted to solve. And maybe that's because you had a passion for music. Tell us in the audience about, you know, seeing the opportunity through that chaos and why you wanted to persevere to make that, you know, world-class program at the school you were at.
Well, I think kind of my philosophy in music education in general is that, especially in a public school setting, we're not necessarily training conservatory soloists. I mean, that's not what I don't think public school music is all about. We're encouraging and inspiring the future consumers of the arts, and we're teaching that no matter what profession or job or lifestyle you choose, the arts are just, they're so life enriching, especially with some of what we live with in the world today. The arts are absolutely essential. And honestly, some of the students that I perhaps had the most connection with and where I saw that really being exemplified were not necessarily the first chair rock star players. But those students who sat in the back of the section, and yeah, their bowing was always off a little bit, and they knew they were never going to play a solo, but they were there every week and they loved it. And they came, and when the kids come and start hanging out in your room when they don't have to, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah.
So I think it's reaching, yeah, it's great to have phenomenal soloists and kids that are, you know, going on to, you know, incredible careers, and we had our share of those, but it's the lifting up of maybe those who are not going to be the best players or the most outstanding performers. And what's really rewarding, and I see this when I go back, a friend and I that both taught together go back and help in the fall when they're doing recruiting and all of the rigmarole that goes on with rentals. We see the children of our students and even a few grandchildren. So wow. Seeing that that parents want their child to have the same experience that they did, and they'll come up to me and say, I remember when I started fourth grade. You know, that's what it's all about. It's keeping this this art, this beauty in the world alive for everyone, not just the people that are going to make a career of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Anne, you know, you spend 34 years doing music and making impacts in these kids' lives and just being in the day-to-day and, you know, being somebody that these kids can count on year after year. Then you make the decision to retire. So how did you come upon that decision, because that can't be an easy decision at any point.
Well, yes and no. There's fortunately in Pennsylvania, there is an excellent retirement system through the state for teachers. You reach a point where, of course, the school board from the fiscal aspect, they want to encourage those senior, more expensive teachers to move on. So there's a financial reality to it. There was a phase when both my husband, who's also a retired music educator, there was a time period when, and I may remember this, there was so much emphasis on standardized testing. I mean, we went overboard on this, and the arts took a hit. Mm-hmm. It took a hit from funding. It took a hit just simply from, you know, we couldn't get kids coming to rehearsals and lessons because, oh, you've got to stay for remediation, or we've got this test and that. I mean, it was not an easy time to be working in the arts, in public education. Did that play into the timing? Perhaps a little. I know it certainly did in my husband's case. And I think we've come back a little bit. I think COVID sort of maybe reconfigured our perspective in a lot of things. But there was a time when it just felt like everyone was frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, the music teachers, the parents, the students, it was a struggle. And that was occurring at about the time that the two of us had actually retired at the same time. There was a financial reality to it. And there's an advantage to being able to step back from your full-time work in your late 50s, when you hopefully are still well and vibrant, and you have opportunities to do other things. So that was part of the decision too. not easy. But I knew at the time that I was leaving the program in good hands. My colleague that we've since lost, but he had taken over some aspects of the program because they made cuts. They were cutting staffing, and you know, we were, this again was something that was happening all across the country in arts programs. Fortunately, yeah, our district has come back from it, but it was not easy.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that over the years, the art departments are the ones that have made some of the bigger sacrifices in terms of the educational curriculum, because it's such an important dimension to how people think and create and do things. I do hope that trend is reversing. At my son's school, they put it in the category of essentials. There's actually an essentials track for art and music, so that people, the children, develop that part of their brain, and which helps them in a number of other ways. But I will say, you know, where you came in and where you left, there's a saying I like to use, and it's leave it better than you found it.
Right.
And I try to apply that mindset with all the things that I pursue or I'm tasked to do. And it sounds like, you know, you've applied that in your world, creating this amazing music program and leaving it in a state that, you know, it's all not going to fall apart now that you're gone. It's sustainable, right, and has made an impact. So that's really awesome, man.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So you retire from music, jump into writing as your second act, and you launch secondactstories.com and start your path of learning how to be a great writer. Tell us a little bit about this.
The writing interest has always been there. And I even occasionally used it when I was teaching, whether if we needed a script to enhance a concert, or if my colleague, who tended to get a bit volatile at times, was ready to fire off a letter to the school board because he was angry about something, I'd say, let me have it. Let me tone it. You know. So, I mean, it's always been there. Even back in college, I was very interested. I took all of the electives that I could with a music curriculum. I had an English professor who inspired and motivated me and tried really hard to entice me over to the dark side, so to speak. And so it's always been there. And I saw retirement as an opportunity to say, okay, it's time to write. And I kind of just sort of struck out randomly, going out online and finding classes and, just experimenting with different forms. And I knew I didn't really want to get into a degree program. I kind of carved my own sort of educational world, mm-hmm, with learning to do this. The blog I see as comparable to practicing scales and etudes as a musician. It's just something to use on a more regular basis, something I don't really go through great revision and editing processes. It's whatever random thing happens to cross my mind that I say, I could talk about that. But the blog was sort of a it's a practice pad, so to speak. And I do obviously work on other more lengthy, more intense essays and, you know, personal essay and memoir. But the blog, which I put together, which probably won't surprise you, with the help of somebody under 30, because I had no clue what I was doing constructing a website, and it desperately needs to be upgraded. And I have a contact, I think, who's going to help me with that. But it was just a way to start.
So, and that's become your springboard to other things. Tell us about, I know you've joined some groups. You've shared with me before we scheduled this episode that you're getting some expert advice now. You might even have some things published.
Yes. Well, I worked briefly with a mentor in Lancaster and would take pieces to her, and we would go through them and edit them. And then I had a piece published with a woman who has a lit journal out of Chicago, and she also does coaching. And she and I have developed a really great relationship. We've met in person several times. She's come into Lancaster for a writing conference. So we stay in close touch. And even now, when I have something that I really think has some potential, but I need feedback, we kind of have a student-teacher relationship there. And I will say it has been wonderful, rejuvenating to be a student again. To be on the other side of that world of being a rookie, or what the profession they call an emerging writer. That's okay, even at my age, to be learning. And it's life affirming and life enhancing to be a learner. I would say, don't ever be afraid to be a beginner at something. You know, that's been really a powerful impact I've had with this whole learning to write or learning to improve my writing.
Yeah, I mean, John and I can certainly relate to you in terms of being a learner again. Neither one of us have an extensive background in podcasting or online media. John's a 20-year veteran of the Marine Corps, and I've got 18 years with the tech industry. But we, you know, to your point, we've put in the effort and tried to learn through the numerous channels now that exist to learn anything in any format that works best for you. And you brought up the idea or having a coach as someone, not only for advice, but that can be, you know, your accountability buddy. Like when you tell someone that you're going to do something and you create it and they critique it, it's helpful in that process as well.
Absolutely. Yep. And someone that you feel comfortable with, and that your relationship, you can have criticism without feeling, you know, destroyed or, you know, That's part of the process, making mistakes. And like I said, I have a nice list of rejections on my Submittable account, but that's part of it.
Yeah.
Well, Anne, you seem like, you know, you're wired for this creative work, and we've got a lot of listeners who are starting, you know, something else or ending a career and trying to pursue, you know, what their second act is. And so for the people who are contemplating that jump or just getting started, that may not be as creative as you are, what are some of the things that you recommend they think about or they consider before taking that plunge?
Well, I think it's sort of a cliche, but I think you need to follow your passion. I mean, if there's something sort of niggling at you, if there's something that's always in the background saying, hey, you want to try this? You know, I mean, I think you need to listen to that voice. You have to know that there's something there, and, you know, it may not work out. I don't know. But you have to, if there's something there that you've always wanted to try, don't say, oh, I'm too old. Or, I mean, I have people that I know that start instruments as adults and love it and play in little pickup groups and find a whole new world that way. And I've found it in the writing community. So I think that's one of the things is to listen to your own inner voice and what it's telling you that, and if there's something that, you know, you feel you have an affinity for or an ability for, give it a shot. I think from a more practical aspect, I mean, in my case, I'm writing because I love it. I'm not necessarily looking for compensation. I mean, if you're looking for another career, you know, in order to maintain your lifestyle or to get a different, you know, type of a salary job, that's a different story. And that puts, you know, it puts a little different perspective on it. But if it's something that you want to do or and find people who can help you. And that's one of the joys of the internet is there are a lot of people out there. I've had great classes. I've had group sessions online. And most of the way that I find places to publish is through blogs and sites. And there's said, I think I mentioned in our phone conversation, there's a conference that's held in Lancaster in the late summer. They haven't had it since COVID. I think they're going to try to reactivate it this summer, but it's called Hippocamp. The publication is an online creative nonfiction group called Hippocampus. And in the late summer, they have a conference that's completely dedicated to folks like me who write creative nonfiction, personal essay, and memoir. And what a welcoming community. The first time I went, I thought, I'm not a real writer. I don't belong here. But that's not the way I was made to feel. Everyone, whether you were published with awards or just starting out, there were opportunities to learn and connect. So I think finding your tribe,
yep,
that can help focus what you want to do, to help educate you, to point you in the right direction, I think that's essential, is to find that tribe, find those folks.
Absolutely. The right community makes all the difference. And a lot of people are afraid of rejection. They're afraid of failure. And even before they get started, those moments of excitement, they can talk themselves out of anything because all this self-doubt,
yes,
and fear creeps in. And then they're just like, no, I'm not even going to try.
Yes, yes, that's, well, and that, you know, you have that in the musical world too, but you have to overcome that beating yourself up all the time. And we all do it. I mean, it's part of being human.
Absolutely.
You know, it's, well, I get that third rejection on the same piece that I really thought was like, but then that also inspires to go back and say, okay, well, what can I do to make this better? And I had that experience with a piece that was, for me, was published in a very prestigious journal just this past November. And I had submitted it to other places and I'd submitted it to one publication and the editor got right back to me and gave me some really helpful information. Instead of just a form, thanks, but no thanks. She said, what if you did this, this, and this? And I did those things and ended up publishing it in a publication where I was really proud of it. But again, there was someone there who took the time to say, I can help you with this. And I wouldn't have experienced that if I wouldn't have taken the chance of submitting that piece to that particular editor.
Yeah. And I mean, it's sort of a mathematical way to think about risk return in dealing with the unknown, trying something new and getting over that hump of fear of failure, fear of rejection is
right.
Whether it's one person, 10 people, 100 people, if you got 100 rejections, there's 8 billion people on the earth. It's, if you were to do the math, those data points or opinions are really irrelevant.
Right.
Again, coming back to your point, finding your community, finding those people who are going to extend a hand out and help you think through things, give you constructive feedback. It may not always be the things you want to hear, but they want to see you do better. Those are the people that you lean into to move forward.
Absolutely. They tell you you're supposed to strive for 100 rejections a year, because if you're not, seriously, I mean, that means you're writing. That means you're sending it out there. And you know, the first time I heard that, I was like, really? Yeah. But there's wisdom in that.
Yeah. So, Anne, as we wrap things up here, we've solved all the technical issues. We've got to know you a little bit. We've learned some of your life story here, which has really been fascinating. Do you have any final thoughts or advice that you want to share with the audience before we start to wrap things up?
Well, I just think, for me, the writing experience has also, as I experience this, and again, I do write personal essay, I write memoir, I'm discovering things about myself. And I find that as I put more of myself and take some emotional risk in what I'm writing, it gets better. So there's a personal spiritual path on what I'm choosing to do. So that, you know, depending on what your interests are or where you're going, it can be life enhancing beyond just producing a product or gaining an experience. But I've found that, I wouldn't say it's soul searching, but kind of digging a little underneath the surface, which is not my typical modus operandi.
Yeah.
I tend to keep things sort of under tight wraps, but that's been good. It's been good to get lost in something. Like there are times I'm working on a piece and it's like, do I really need to make supper now? You know, that's been exciting to get wrapped up in something that you sort of lose, you know. So don't be afraid. Again, don't be afraid to be a beginner and don't be afraid to just take that step. Just go for it and see what happens.
That is a great, wow. Those are some great final thoughts.
Thank you.
Share.
Yeah. Well, Anne, having the second act with Michael and myself collide with secondactstories.com in this conversation was so much fun. It was incredible. So thank you for agreeing to jump on with us today. If people want to find you, what's the best way that they can do that?
Secondactstories.com. And again, I hope within the next month or two to be updating the site with some links to published works that are accessible online. Not all of them are, but some are. Again, I'm a somewhat of a neophyte when it comes to tech, and I tread carefully trying to avoid trolls and other unwanted hangers-on of the internet. But yeah, I need to work on expanding the site. But secondactstories.com is the site. And I have quite a collection there, which may at some point come together in some kind of a publication. We'll see. I was looking at some of those today, but that's the best way. And they're random. They're thoughts from, and the other thing I've found too about writing is I've become a heightened sensitivity to the world around me. I'm always listening and looking for sometimes things that happen in the humblest settings that are powerful. They tell us who we are as humans. Simple things that are just, that's been very rewarding and very enriching for me, because I'll look at something as simple as a conversation in a doctor's waiting room or a bouquet of flowers at the hairstylist, that I found a whole story behind those simple things. So it's helped to develop a positivity and an appreciation for life and for what we hold together as humans. And I think that's desperately needed right now. So that's been a real positive for my experience with this writing.
Yeah. Mindfulness and being more present. I think people are becoming more aware of being more present, which is a step in the right direction. Now we just have to get there with all the technology distractions that exist today that take our attention in a gazillion different directions. But and I thank you so much for taking time out of your day and talking with us. You know, we look forward to seeing more of your published work in the months and years ahead. We'll definitely be checking out secondactstories.com to see what's new and available to the masses. And we'll also be sure to include links to your information in the episode details.
Great. Thank you so much. And I apologize for all the technical issues. I don't know. We thought we were ready, but obviously we weren't.
It just comes with the territory, and it don't worry at all about it. And yeah, for our audience out there, we look forward to connecting with you again next week.
The Second Act with Michael and John stars Michael Newborn and John Ballinger. The podcast is produced by Seltzer Kings. For more information on the show, check out michaelandjohn.com. Or if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, give the guys a shout on their socials at The Second Act with Michael and John on most platforms. Thanks for listening.